your man, how are you on?
That's what happens when you're pregnant.
Yeah, it does. I'm telling you, I'm so tired.
I'm the doctor, by the way.
You're listening to Pieces of Eight, the Doctor Who podcast that's short and sweet this week. We are on the trail, as ever, of those sections of the Doctor Who universe that feature the incarnation of the Time Lord, as played by Paul McGann. I'm Rebecca Chapman.
And I'm Kenny Smith, and you join us as we continue on our unstoppable quest, which probably has no end in sight, actually, to feature the Eighth Doctor's exploits, whether on screen in books, novellas, full cast audios, short stories, comics, animations, talking books, magazines, and more.
Hoot hoot. This. I apologise. This week we're taking a look at one of Big Finish's earliest narrated short trip stories.
Yeah, well, yes, we are. And we're having a look at Letting Go, which was written by Simon Guerrier and released by Big Finish as part of the Short Trips Volume 2 collection back in February 2011. And unfortunately, because Beck is so tired at the moment, it's nothing to do with Simon's story. Far from it. It's unfortunately with, 2.5 odd weeks to go till you give birth as we speak. It's knackering you out. So how's that? I know. But how's that reading voice of yours doing today? And can you tell us what the Big Finish website has to say about Letting Go?
If I manage to get through this without yawning, it'll be a miracle. And I'm really sorry, listeners. I promise I want to be here. Eight fantastic new adventures in space and time with the Doctor and his companions, featuring stories from many of Doctor Who's most popular authors from the worlds of television, print, comics, and audio, as well as new talent and fresh voices, and read by your favourite Big Finish actors. Letting Go by Simon Guerrier, read by India Fisher. Charlie learns a lot about the Doctor when she visits the home of a dead hero. And that's it. Maybe we should have like a little excerpt from the story before we go on.
Yeah, let's have a couple of minutes of that from the start, which is about 1/8 of the story, actually.
Letting Go by Simon Guerrier. I made the Doctor go to see them, and it's good that we did, but I didn't understand. I've been travelling with the Doctor for a few weeks, not long enough to take it for granted. I mean, we were on another planet, in this city of flying cars and creatures, but long enough to know that I'd fallen in love with the Doctor, and that he... Well, that was a long time ago, when I was with that Doctor, my first one, all floppy hair and cheekbones, with the breathless passion of the poet Shelley. I was smitten with him. Well, who wouldn't be? But it wasn't all wonder and gazing into one another's eyes. I'd made the Doctor bring us to the planet of flying cars and creatures because of my promise to Stan. Stan was an antl. That's a genus, not a species. He'd grown up in one of the mile-high dormitories tapering into the sky. Beautiful, spindly designs like that church in Barcelona. But Stan said he hated the place. Spent his whole time growing up wanting to get away, to explore the inner planets, even meet some real humans. People in his class weren't meant to believe in humans. He'd laughed as he told me that, flapping the tendrils round his mouth. Then he reached out to take my hand.
"You're the best thing that's ever happened to me," he said,
which is a pretty good line for a girl to hear. Later, much later, after he was... He reached for my hand once more. His skin was all shriveled and black from the fire.
"You saved us,"
I told him.
"You saved everyone on the ship."
He struggled to speak, his face contorting at the effort just to form a few words.
Tell my mother,
he said.
Tell my mother I was wrong.
So, Kenny, can you tell us a bit about these early audio short trips, please, and how they came to be?
Absolutely. A few weeks ago, we were talking about the Fantastic Museum piece, which was a reading from one of the short trips books. Because back in, pardon you, that's all right, because we are up late recording this, so it's all right. I just was in earlier today, I was in a big meeting about my work podcast, and I felt the same. Don't worry. Anyway, Big Finish got a license to print short trips books after the BBC decided to stop doing them in the late 1990s, and they took them over and started doing a whole load of collections of books. And then when the license was returned to the BBC, as they wanted to keep everything in-house when it came to publishing, Big Finish carried on doing short trips but as audio-only releases. So they recorded four volumes where they got one story on each volume for the first eight Doctors, as they only had the license to do classic series at that point with the one reader. So you'd have, in this case, India Fisher reading four stories, you'd William Russell reading four stories, and they'd go one story on each volume, and then they built them up that way. So it came out that way, and this was the second one of them to do that. So yeah, that's how we got to the point of getting Letting Go.
That is actually really interesting.
Yeah, well, how did you find this one? It's considering there's an awful lot packed into it. It's quite an emotional wee tale.
It is. I don't know if it's like pregnancy hormones or if you're just purposely picking things that are really emotional at the moment.
No, it's definitely just coincidence, because I mean, in this case, we've got poor old Stan, an alien who the Doctor and Charlie have met, and he died doing what the Doctor asked him to do to help save a spaceship that had collided with an Earthship, and or was about to collide an Earthship, and it was just poor Stan, who's I think an insectoid species of some sort, and just very sad. And then of course this is the fallout of Charlie wanting to go and see his family and spend time with them afterwards, and it's quite interesting to see how, obviously, this is something the Doctor doesn't normally do.
No, he doesn't. He's very much a it's really sad that you've died, but as you were.
Yeah, I think just.
And I don't mean that in a horrible way. I mean that in a. He's a, at this point, what, 600 year old Time Lord?
Oh, God knows. His age is. It changes all the time. Look at the story Orbis, where the Doctor thinks it might be something like three. With some parts, he's 900. I mean, in Time in the Rani, McCoy's first story, the Doctor's 953, but by the time it comes to Rose, he's 900. So, yeah, it's ages and stuff. It's. Let's not go to that part. That's that doesn't count, because it just gets confusing. But no, I think it's right, because it's just a case of, because he sees so much death, he just has to move on, and not in a heartless way. It's just, as we know, death is part of life.
Of course, you know.
Almost my profound statement of the day. But no, I think it is brilliant what Simon did. He got lots of emotion in there, really heartfelt, and India performs it superbly, as always, just that whole feeling, and just her affection for Stan, and yeah, I just think it's brilliant. An alien called Stan, of all the names we're going to have, they're not called something like Garondkvist or Zarglox. Flubblebullybar is actually my middle name. Was quite bizarre. How did you know that? Flubblebullybar.
I had no idea. Just really good intuition, you know.
Or I give off Flubblebullygar vibes, but anyway. Yeah, another great one. And considering it's, what, 16, something like that. But anyway, we'll come back to that after.
Definitely. Without further ado, let's meet the man who wrote this short but sweet gem, Simon Guerrier himself. And am I right in saying that this was another one that you nabbed in Los Angeles whilst at Gallifrey?
Yes. I actually prepped in advance to see if he would be up for it, and thought it'd be more fun to do an in-person chat. And I mean, I've known Simon for, God, 15 years, but never met him in person before. So, yeah, it was nice. We sat in a very comfy sofa, and it's a bit of a noisy background about that. Sorry, but I wasn't really going to go over and tell Janet Fielding or Sophie Aldred or Jodie Whittaker to shut their faces while I was doing an interview, because that would have been a bit rude.
You only got a bit of...
There's always other times.
I know. I'll be able to take little one.
Yeah. So, let's go to Simon.
I am Simon Guerrier, and I wrote The Short Trip, Letting Go.
First question first, as we ask all people who've come on to Pieces of Eight for the first time, what do you remember about the first time you saw the TV movie?
I was very excited. I saw it on video, and I was at university, and I'd been to a lecture, and two of my friends, Darren and Andy, came back with me to watch it, and we watched it on video in awed silence, and then we watched it again. And I think we went clubbing that evening. It was a very exciting time.
It was, because I was one of the people who went through to a midnight opening in Edinburgh.
Right.
And queued up for it. And so I was there at the very beginning, and sort of even before the TV broadcast. So I'm sure you were watching it before the TV broadcast.
Yes, yes.
Oh, good man. You are a proper Doctor Who fan. You're allowed in this podcast.
Oh, well, we're all proper Doctor Who fans.
That's true.
Well, we're all improper Doctor Who fans.
Well, yeah, definitely. We'll go with that. How did you find it at the time? Was it one that you thought, this is definitely got, or this Doctor has got something about him and we want to see more?
What did I know? It's such a long time ago. What I remember was the real buzz it had and the excitement of lots of people who had never shown any interest in Doctor Who were interested and were curious. And so people I knew, you know, before that, Doctor Who was something that I was into. And if people found out, they'd ask me about. But this was other people talking about it anyway. I mean, that happened again in 2005. That was exciting. But it was very exciting. I kind of, you know, I knew there were problems with it, and I knew there were things, and I knew the chances of it going to series were limited. But it seemed to be a good, you know, it seemed to be a good chance, and I don't know. It's so much of what I feel about it is in retrospect. It's very difficult to remember what I felt at the time, but I just remember the buzz of it.
Yeah.
That's the thing, and just the fun of it.
I absolutely agree. I think there's something really. I think the energy that Paul brings to the part is a different energy than all the other Doctors beforehand, and that makes him quite different, because he's got that youthful energy, whereas Peter, obviously being a younger actor, but maybe didn't quite have that same physical charged up thing that Paul has, like just that constant on the move kinetic.
Yeah, I think also I really like, so you know, when you write a script, you have your outline, you have your story, and that has to be approved. And then you write the actual mechanics of the script, and that's the dialogue. And the dialogue is how you get across the information. And with Doctor Who, a lot of what happens has to be done through dialogue, because you, even with a big budget, you can't show everything and whatever. So the Doctor is kind of, his role in the story is to be the hero, but also the figure that does the exposition. So he's both Luke Skywalker and Ben Kenobi.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, use that kind of as a way into it. Which means the Doctor does a lot of talking. And the only way you can hide all the mechanical pipework of the talking is to give the Doctor more things to say, which are daft and funny and a bit left wing. So there's a lot of chatter. And what I really admire in what Matthew Jacobs does in the TV movie is how little needs to be said. But there's a lot of complex ideas and a lot of complex history, which clearly has been imposed, but has been given to him. And he makes a lot of that very light. And I think that's a really good bit of writing. So whatever you think of what story was required to do and what the producers wanted and whatever, the actual writing, delivering that as a script, is very skillfully done. And also Jeffrey Sachs's direction is beautiful. I mean, the production design is, it's shot by shot, it just looks glorious. And what a great shame that Jeffrey Sachs hasn't worked on a series since.
Yeah, I've always thought that.
You know, he worked with Julie Gardner, he worked on other things, and yeah, what a shame, because he's so good. So I mean, that's the thing. There's so much that's so good in it.
So by the time you came to do Letting Go, of course, you've heard an awful lot of the Big Finish output and what they'd done with the Eighth Doctor.
Don't get up or anything.
Do you know, I've just thought of something. You were asking about what my reaction was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was so abuzz about the TV movie, I wrote my dissertation about it.
Wow.
I wrote my dissertation on the TV movie and the Star Trek film First Contacts. And the thing that I was really interested in is that both were taking a popular long-running TV show and doing kind of movie versions that were darker and more violent. And I think with First Contacts, that worked. And with Doctor Who, it mismatched. You know, it didn't quite fit. And so yeah, so I was, yeah, I was, that was my reaction to the TV movie.
Wow.
I really wanted to kind of grapple with it. Yes, so Letting Go, I have thought about it a great deal. Yeah, I'd completely forgotten that. It's so long ago.
Yeah, that's amazing that this pops into the head like that. So I take it you'd quite enjoyed how things had gone with the Doctor and Charlie and the Doctor and Lucy and following their adventures.
Yeah. I mean, that first run, you know, beginning with Storm Warning, was really exciting. Really exciting. And I very faithfully, you know, listened to it month by month and stuff. And I'd worked with India on something. What had I done? I'd interviewed her and Conrad for Doctor Who magazine, and I'd done something with her. We worked on something together, and so I was just keen to. And by the time I did Letting Go, that was all in the past, and she'd moved on and stuff. So it's just I quite like the idea of, you know, a lot of the stuff you produce for Big Finish is, here's a historical period of Doctor Who, you know, like we want something set in 1973, or how would they have done it with the first production team? And it just seemed quite fun to go, I'm going to do a historical period of Big Finish. That you know, really appealed to me. So that's what I did.
Fantastic. So how did the commission come about? Do you remember?
Well, it's interesting. It's a long time ago and I don't really remember. So I was going through my old emails, and I've got the email when I delivered the story.
And I've got Zana.
From Zana. Yeah, so I delivered it to Zana, and I've got an email where she said, I've got some notes on what we discussed, but nothing before that. So I think we must have discussed it in person. And I'm not sure where, I can't really remember. But I think we kind of shot the breeze about it. I mean, it was only 2,500 words, so it wasn't a lot. And there's not much to it. But the original version, from what Zana said to me, was set on contemporary Earth, I think, or maybe set in the past. And David Richardson just thought that was a bit too similar, that my original idea was a bit too similar to what I was doing in The Perpetual Bond. So I said, how about I do the same story, but in space? And so they went, yes, okay, fine. So that's how that came about. And then I must have written it very quickly, because I had an email saying, can you do that on the 2nd of April 2010? And then on the 5th of April, I sent her a draft. So I just got on with it, really.
Yeah, because it's a lovely emotional story. I think that's what it's pretty much doing. I say it's going, doing the Big Finish historical thing, but it's almost that emotion that we had with the series and TV, and it's gone into that a lot more than perhaps maybe even Big Finish had done before.
Oh, I think I'm glad you think so, but I think that's what made the Eighth Doctor and Charlie so compelling. That when she said she loved him, I totally bought that. Totally bought that. And I bought that because, not just because what happened in that story, but because what had been developed. I mean, I mean, all credit to the team. That was compelling and really, I don't know whether it influenced Russell and what Russell was doing with the TV show, but I can see a connection to all of that stuff. And that, just the idea that the companion would have feelings of that depth. So that's what I, and I hadn't really, had I written anything similar to that? No, not, I don't know. I, That's what I wanted to do myself. So. Yeah.
I think it's quite, just with the whole setting of it and the fact of death at the core of the story, I think it's quite a moving one, sort of talking about how the family are left behind.
Yes, I was thinking a number of things. So this was in 2010, and there'd been a thing in the news that had kind of gone. It's gone on and on in the newspapers, which was about the then Prime Minister Gordon Brown writing letters to the families of soldiers who'd been killed in Afghanistan. And there were various things about whether his handwriting was good and, you know, whether it was appropriate and whether he put in things that were appropriate or whatever. And, you know, all kind of just them getting at him and whatever, trying to find an angle on him. And I just thought, that's what the brigadier would have to do. You know, the brigadier would have to write those letters when the two unnamed soldiers get killed and fall in the river and vanish in Day of the Daleks. That's two more letters the brigadier's got to write. And the doctor never has to do that admin. You know. So I kind of had that in the back of my mind, and you know what happens in my head is I have kind of little bits of idea like that, and I scribble them down in my notebook, not really knowing what I'm going to do. And then when somebody like Xana says, "Have you got an idea for a story?" I can flip through my notebook and go, "Oh, I've got that, and I've got this other bit of idea." And I think what I did was I was thinking about the Eighth Doctor's character and the way he's kind of like. He kind of moves from thing to thing quite quickly and he's easily distracted. And I was kind of like, wouldn't it be, there's something in matching that thing where he never keeps still with that thing that there's a serious sadmin job. What if that's why he's so jumpy and fidgety? Because he can't stop, because otherwise he dwells on the darker side of things. That's kind of where I just thought there's something, there's the beginnings of something there. So that's kind of where the story came from.
It's wonderful, because re-listening to it again, I hadn't listened to it in years and popped it on, and it was just like very, very moving.
And I knew India could do it.
Yeah,
you know, because I'd heard a lot of her stuff, and I'm just like, that's why, you know, she's really good at. It's a bit like with Jean Marsh, who I work with on the companion comic course. I knew she could convey that in a way that would, you know, that would really get you.
Did you go to the recording?
No. And I saw India at something and kind of, you know, she, oh yeah, I read your story, oh how are you, you know, and that was it, because it's very, you know, peripheral. So it didn't really, it's a funny thing, it didn't really, because I wrote it so quickly and it was just, it was in and done and recorded, it didn't really touch the sides. And I'd written so many short stories, because I did loads of them, I did like 18, 19 short stories when we finished. But when you asked me about this, I was like, oh, I'm for that. And so I went back and looked at it, and went, oh, that's, you know, that's not bad. It's got my usual kind of thing of zinging around a bit and trying not to tell it in a straightforward way. But yeah, it's, you know, it's been fun to revisit.
Yeah. It's one you're quite happy with. You seem quite happy with it.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, there's it was so painless to do. Xana made it very, very easy.
Yeah.
I had the idea, wrote it, and off it went. I wish everything else could be that.
Yeah, it's a wonderful lesson, and India gives it some really good emotional depth. And not that it was lacking in the text, but it has that. She really puts her, she's fully invested in it.
Yeah. I think what I really like, I think we might have talked about it in advance. That's ringing a bell. Or maybe after she'd done it, and she said part of the trick is it's quite emotional, but you play against that. So you kind of have this wavering thing that she's trying to keep control, not whatever, which, she's very, very good. Very, very good.
Simon, thank you for your time. It's been marvellous.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Huge thanks to Simon for his time. He really is a brilliant writer and fantastic guy too. And did you know that this podcast is actually longer than the original story reading? As that's only 16 minutes and 44 seconds. Useless fact of the day.
I did not know that, but considering how good you are at getting people to talk, that doesn't surprise me.
Shush, very kind. But Simon's currently working on a book about David Whittaker, the original Doctor Who story editor, and he's got some amazing research to share when it's published. He was telling a few of us a few things at Gallif, which are just fantastic. And no spoilers here, because it's his work, and I'm not going to go and reveal all beforehand. So yeah, it's definitely recommended, and hopefully when it comes out, I'll get a chat with him, and it'll be on over with The Power of Three, which continues to drop episodes every week.
I keep forgetting that you've brought it back. I'm really pleased about this, though.
It just means that my spare time is even less than it was, so on top of Vortex and Big Finish, other work, so yeah, lots to go on with. But hey, it's all fun.
Well, you'll get a break after we finish this season.
Yes, that's true.
Now, listeners, remember, if you've enjoyed today's Pieces of Eight, or indeed liked any episode we've done, please do leave a review for us on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts, as it means more people can find our episodes, and it's always appreciated. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter at Pieces of Eight, if you do not do so already. And we have a new Facebook group too, so feel free to send us a request to join in.
Absolutely, that sounds fantastic. So, yeah, and of course we'll be back very soon with another episode, and we're going to be taking a look at the animated version of Shada with the Doctor, Romana and K-9, and we'll find out how it came to be, as it's the Doctor Who story that's incomplete, but has actually been completed more times than this Doctor has lost his memory, and that's a lot. So until next time, I've been Kenny Smith.
And I was Rebecca Chapman. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.